Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm your host, Brian Caravu, joined by our live blog director, John Rahor, this morning. We are talking Packers football, talking offseason, talking free agency, talking NFL draft today. Joining us on the program at 9 a.m. Central Time, so a half hour from now, top of the hour, will be Sigmund Bloom, NFL draft analyst, lead NFL draft writer at Bleacher Report, and senior writer at footballguys.com. Sigmund's a great guy. Glad to have him with us at 9 o'clock. I've asked him to write for the Maple Street Press Packers Annual in the past. He's always done a great job. He's always done the analyzation of the draft picks for our publication. So great to be having him talk some NFL draft here at 9 a.m. Until then, probably going to talk a lot about Anthony Hargrove, seeing as that was the big news yesterday. Packers making another splash in free agency. Not the biggest signing in the world, but as far as the Packers go, you know, they're not really a team that's known to dive into free agency too often. So this comes as kind of a surprise and somewhat news. And I suppose I should mention here, just before we get to that, I had announced yesterday and even posted on the CheeseheadTV.com that we were going to have South Carolina State and NFL draft prospect Christian Thompson on the show today. Christian is in a plane as we speak, so we're going to be pushing that back to Monday. We're going to have him on. We're going to be talking NFL draft with Christian Thompson on Monday. So, push back over the weekend so he can get to where he's going. But excited to be talking to him, one of a safety prospect in this year's draft. So he was at the NFL Combine in February, and his name's probably going to be called more than likely in April, late April, when the NFL draft starts. So look forward to that Monday. But let's get to it. Let's talk about this Anthony Hargrove signing. And there's many layers to this signing. I mean, this can take us all the way up to 9 o'clock practically here, just talking about Anthony Hargrove and what this means to the Packers and what they've got on their hands now. So the Packers sign Anthony Hargrove, as I mentioned before, not a team that's, you know, heavily invested in free agency or has been in the past under Ted Thompson. But they go ahead and they sign Hargrove, and now it looks like the Packers are really making a concerted effort to improve this defense that was so poor last season. Last in NFL history, the worst in NFL history against the pass, most passing yards in NFL history. So Packers trying to get some pass rush by signing Hargrove, signed Daniel Muir a week ago. And of course, in addition to Jeff Saturday on offense, a little bit more higher profile signing. But still, here's a guy, Hargrove, who's a veteran of the NFL. He's 28 years old. He's been around for a while. And he's known for his pass rush, interior pass rusher. Not the type of guy who's going to get you double-digit sacks, but a guy who can collapse the pocket a little bit, up the middle, up the gut. That's what he's done, you know, particularly with the Rams when he was really young, probably a second year in the NFL. I think he had a really good season, did some damage with the Saints and helping them win a Super Bowl in 2009, was with the Seahawks last year, got three sacks and limited playing time. So, he's the type of guy who the Packers are looking for. And, you know, it's not guaranteed he's going to make this team, but, you know, I would say it's a good bet. But if there's some ifs, and we'll get to that here in a second. Comment from Mark on the live blog I see. Hargrove is a good signing if he can stay at 290. So if you search Tony Hargrove on the internet, and by the way, apparently his name is Tony Hargrove. Tony. Not Anthony, or, well, his name is Anthony, but he apparently goes by Tony. So he told that to Rob Domofsky yesterday of the Green Bay Press Gazette, as I saw on Twitter. I was looking through some NFL union information, and they refer to him as Tony. So he's Tony Hargrove, not Anthony. And, you know, if you search him just on the internet, you know, I think he's listed on the NFL's official website as being 272 pounds, which, you know, we've talked about before on this show, is, and, you know, wrote on the blog as well, is rather light for a Packers 3-4 defensive lineman. I mean, you don't get under 285 for the type of 3-4 defensive lineman the Packers look for, and almost any 3-4 defense for that matter. But, you know, he's listed as 272, but Kevin Seifert of ESPN.com had a chance to interview Hargrove yesterday, said he is around 290, 285 to 290, I believe, right now. So, and he's been near 300 pounds when he played with the Saints. So, you know, not too bad. And you have to imagine that's what the Packers are going to want him at, around 290-ish, maybe a little more, perhaps. I'd like to see a little more, as long as he can keep the quickness. But so that's where we're at with that point. Now, you know, hanging over Tony Hargrove's head is a couple black clouds, a couple dark clouds. In his past has been multiple suspensions from the NFL. First for 4 games, and that, you know, of course, comes after a couple positive test results for, you know, drug abuse. And then after that, let's see, that came in the beginning of 2007, I believe. He was suspended the first 4 games of the season, finished the season with the Buffalo Bills at the time, and then suspended the entire 2008 season for another substance abuse violation. I just know that Hargrove has admitted to using cocaine in the past. I do not know if that is specifically what the year-long suspension was for. I tried to do a little internet research, couldn't find anything in particular, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it is for cocaine. He's admitted to such in the past, and he's had issues with the past when he was young, when he was with the St. Louis Rams, the team he came into the NFL. He missed practices. It was a publicized thing. You can read about that on the internet as well, you know, if you do enough searching. So there's this guy who's had some issues in the past, apparently has turned himself around, though, as far as the drugs go. Mark says on the live blog, he got treatment for drugs, which is good. I've seen videos on YouTube. You can go there as well. Just search Anthony Hargrove, which is what he used to go by. And you'll find, you know, how he's, you know, tried to turn his life around, and he seems sincere in that regard. But the other thing is, though, and perhaps the bigger thing that we're still dealing with Anthony Hargrove, or Tony Hargrove now, pardon me, is, you know, his, this bounty gate. When he was with the Saints, and he was with them for 2 seasons, in 2009 and 2010. And, of course, in 2009, that was the year the Saints won the Super Bowl. And the game before the Super Bowl, the NFC Championship game, he was actually fined for a late hit on former Packers quarterback Brett Favre. This, of course, was when Favre was playing for the Minnesota Vikings. Saints met the Vikings in the 2009 NFC Championship game. It was actually in 2010, but we're talking the 2009 season here. So he's, you know, the type of guy who, you know, I don't want to say the type of guy, but, you know, there's kind of this hovering over him right now, whether he was the type of guy who did try to intentionally hurt someone. He's quoted in Sports Illustrated as running off the field saying, "Favre is out of the game, Favre is out of the game." And that looked really bad. It sounds really bad. Like he's ecstatic that Brett Favre got hurt. So, you look at that and you kind of shake your head and you kind of wonder, like, wow, okay, here's a guy who turned his life around, you know, coming back from drug addiction, but is he still a character concern? I mean, is this the type of guy you want on your team, somebody who's going to intentionally hurt someone? Now, the other side of the story here is Hargrove has, said he has not tried to intentionally injure anyone. He's released a statement since Bountygate happened, you know, just a couple weeks ago, before his whole, you know, interest with the Packers kind of came out here, that, you know, he vehemently denied it. He did not try to hurt Brett Favre or anybody else, did not try to intentionally injure them, totally admits to hitting them late, accepted the penalty, the fine, but says he did not try to intentionally hurt anyone. So, you know, there's this hanging over him, and of course, everybody knows by now, the NFL has disciplined the New Orleans Saints. They've disciplined the head coach, Sean Payton, the general manager, Mickey Loomis, the assistant coaches, which include Greg Williams at the time, others, dock the Saints 2 draft picks, fine them $500,000. So, they've disciplined the Saints, but they haven't disciplined any players yet, and they're considering it. I know head Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, has said, they're still kind of researching, still kind of looking into it, still want to talk to the players union about what to do. So this could be happening. There could be a suspension. And this, of course, has an impact on the Packers now that he's a member of the Packers. And you know, here's where you really get at the Anthony Tony Hargrove story here, is that it kind of depends upon what the Packers signed him for as to whether this was the right move or not. You have to imagine he did not sign for a whole lot of money. Probably somewhere, I imagine he's getting above the veterans minimum. But how much above? You know, I'm not sure it's a whole lot. I'm not sure that, he's getting paid a bunch of money here, which really makes it, a pretty good signing for the Packers, if they didn't have to, invest a lot into him. Maybe it's a highly incentivized contract where, the more he plays, the more he gets paid. You know, very common practice in NFL contracts now, how they, get a bonus for, every game they're active or something like that on the active roster on game days. And it could very well be the case that's what the Packers did here. But because of this, hanging over his head, hovering over his head, this possible suspension, what's going to happen if all of a sudden he's suspended? Well, the Packers obviously want to find this out, and I'm sure every team in the NFL wants to find this out before they sign guys from the Saints as well, and the Saints want to find out too. If there's going to be suspensions, let's know soon. Let's know in the next month or two. So we know where these guys stand. If they're going to be suspended for a couple games, it's maybe not a big deal. They're suspended for half a season. Yet now you're sitting like, holy cow, now do you want to, keep around a guy like Tony Hargrove if he's going to be suspended half the season? I don't think you do. But again, we're just speculating at this point. That's nothing official. And, some people have suggested, some members of the Minnesota Vikings have suggested a player like Jonathan Vilma be banned for life from the NFL. I don't know if that's really an option, but it's been bandied about at least. And I go back to it here. As long as the Packers signed Hargrove for a minimal contract, let's say they find out he's suspended for half the season, well, they can cut him, and there won't be much of a salary cap hit, if he's suspended. You know, they can cut him any time between now and the start of the season, and as long as you don't invest a roster spot in him, you know, you're okay. You're okay. Comment from DJ Protege on the live blog. So would Hargrove be a defensive end? Yes. Hargrove would be a defensive end. And when the Packers play their base 3-4 defense, he would likely be a 5-technique defensive end. When they switch to their nickel sub-package, he would be one of those two pass-rushing defensive tackles. So, yes, he would be a defensive end, basically, defensive lineman. No chance here. He's really an outside linebacker. So that's where we're at with Anthony Hargrove and where he fits into this Packers defense and what they have, invested into him and, where he fits. One more thing that you have to keep in mind with Hargrove that I was asked on Twitter actually yesterday, where does this leave the salary cap? I think somebody was telling me the Packers had, it was over $5 million in salary cap space. It might have even been near $7 million before the Jeff Saturday signing. So the Packers signed Jeff Saturday. They signed Daniel Muir. They signed Tony Hargrove and Jarrett Bush. And now all of a sudden the Packers, they've got to be pretty darn tight with the salary cap. So that's a consideration, going forward. Apparently they've had enough to sign Hargrove. Otherwise the NFL would just disallow it. They have to have the space. So they have the space, but I mean, now the question is during the season, they're going to start looking to extend the contracts of guys who are currently on the team, the guys who have contracts coming up. They've got guys like Aaron Rodgers, Greg Jennings, Clay Matthews, B.J. Raji, all these guys, with expiring contracts coming up, the best players on the team. So, how are they going to re-sign them? Well, the way is to restructure or release some players on the team. Here's what I would do if I were the Packers. I would cut Chad Clifton, cut him. I just think you have to part ways with him, or he retires, and that would probably be the ideal situation. He kind of goes out with a little bit of dignity, unless he really wants to play, unless Chad Clifton really wants to play and find another team, more power to him if he wants. I saw it with Mark Tauscher last year. He didn't retire. The Packers cut him. Apparently Mark Tauscher still wanted to play, otherwise he would have retired, but didn't find any takers. So it might be a case where Mark Tauscher kind of wished he retired. I mean, not that it really matters in the whole scheme of things. Not that anybody thinks any less of Mark Tauscher. So, but, at the time, it just kind of looked bad that the Packers cut him. So maybe Clifton retires, which is not a given here. At all. Mike McCarthy said this week at the NFL owners meeting that, it's going to be a medical decision if Clifton comes back. They can restructure the contract, or I would, with Donald Driver. He's worth like a $2 million bonus, roster bonus, sometime around the beginning of training camp. I would restructure that. I don't think you can pay him that. I think you try to keep Donald Driver around. I've said this many times, but not at the salary he's at. I see comments here on AJ Hawk on the live blog. Nobody's cutting AJ Hawk this year. You can put that out of your minds for this year. Maybe he's benched. I would be all in favor of that if DJ Smith or some rookie is ready to step in, by all means. But AJ Hawk is not being cut this year. His you know, the savings this year they would make in the salary cap are not even comparable to what they would save in future years. Plus, he does provide depth. You know, maybe you don't believe AJ Hawk should be part of the starting lineup. Fine, I probably agree with you, but it, you know, as far as being a backup, yes, I realize he's would be one of the most highest paid backups in the entire league. But all of a sudden, an injury comes along. You want AJ Hawk there, and you saw it last year. Injuries happen. Saw it the year before. Plenty of injuries happen in football. So that's where the Packers are at with AJ Hawk. But the one roster move here that's flying under the radar a little bit as well is Charles Woodson. Apparently has a rather large roster bonus. I think somewhere in the realm of, is it $4 million? It's a lot. I don't know the exact amount of it, but it's coming up in mid-April. That is the interesting one here. What they're going to do with his bonus that's coming in mid-April. So you're going to see something happen, I think. This is what should happen here in the next few weeks. I mean, we're at the end of March here. What, today's March 30th, so there's one more day left in March. Mid-April's 2 weeks from now, so 2 week time frame. The Packers could, you know, could conceivably restructure Charles Woodson's contract, and I think they should, and I think he should, for the sake of giving them more salary cap space. It would just be more so moving money around with Charles Woodson, more so than like taking money away from him. I don't think that's going to happen much. So, you know, that's you know, what's going to happen here. Comment from Lou on the live blog, an under the radar topic here. What do you think about Greg Jennings? I love him, but the market for wide receiver, he's going to cost $1 zillion. And we already have Jordy, Jones, and Cobb. Good question. I totally see where you're going with that. Wide receivers are making a lot of money right now, as we've seen in free agency. And Greg Jennings could cost a lot. And I think what you do is kind of make Greg Jennings a mid-season contract extension offer. Here's why. First of all, you kind of wait for the season to play out a little bit. You know, injuries have a way of happening. If all of a sudden Greg Jennings tears an ACL during the season, you know, okay, well, you've kind of bought some time. You know, when his contract does expire, maybe he's not going to get as much money from other teams out there, knowing he's an injured player, or you know, so that's an option there. And the other reason you do it at midseason is because, you know, the Packers traditionally, as always happened here, is you save money by giving them contract extensions before they actually expire. I mean, the players give them a discount for putting that faith in them, for giving them that money before their contracts expire. You know, how many times have the Packers done that now? With Jordy Nelson, we saw this past season, with Desmond Bishop, with Tremont Williams, with Aaron Rodgers, with Brandon Chiller back before he was cut. They do these in-season extensions, and the Packers save money on that. So, you know, if Greg Jennings is hell-bent on going to free agency like, you know, Scott Wells was, well, there's nothing you can do about that. But I think you kind of have to, you know, offer Greg Jennings to stick around. I think he's at the top of his game. So I think you offer him a fair contract. Yeah, he's going to be one of the highest paid wide receivers in the NFL. Hopefully you don't have to make him the highest paid wide receiver, but I don't think he's worth that. You know, Greg Jennings is great. He's a Pro Bowler. He's in the top 10 of the NFL, but he's not Larry Fitzgerald. You know, he's not Calvin Johnson. He's not getting that type of money. So, but if Greg Jennings wants that, again, there's nothing you can do about it. If he's hell-bent on testing free agency, but from what we've seen of Greg Jennings, he seems like a pretty level-headed guy. So, you know, we'll be seeing a lot of other wide receivers this season. You know, it was just said by Mike McCarthy again this week at the NFL owners meeting. He wants to see more of Jordy Nelson in the slot. Patrick on the live blog says, really hope Cobb gets more time maybe in the slot this season. I think all those things could happen. You know, it's tough. You know, the Packers are so deep at wide receiver, and JerMichael Finley is practically a wide receiver. And other tight ends on the roster have some wide receiver qualities like DJ Williams. So, you know, it's going to be hard to please everyone. The good thing as well, all these guys are good. All these wide receivers for the Packers are good. Even if a guy gets hurt, you've got the confidence that, you know, another guy can step up and they're not going to lose a whole lot, lose too much. You know, I just reading allgreenbaypackers.com this morning, a column written by Adam Cech saying it's not smart to keep six wide receivers. And I like Adam as a writer. I've hired him for Maple Street Press as well in the past, and he does a great job. I do have to disagree with him here on this point that it wouldn't be a smart idea to keep six wide receivers. I think, you know, I kind of subscribe to the philosophy that you keep the best 53 players. Now, obviously, you have to, if you have a weak position, you know, I mean, you do have to keep a certain number of players at certain positions. I mean, it goes without saying, but where there's extra talent, where there's a surplus of talent, you can keep a couple extra guys. I mean, the Packers have done it in the past. They've kept three fullbacks before. They've kept five tight ends this past season. So this year it's looking like they'll keep six wide receivers based upon having Torrey Gurley on the practice squad and DeAndre Burrell. These guys we've talked about in the past who, you know, chose to stay with Green Bay on the practice squad late last season instead of signing with another team. And so, you know, I think that's the direction they're headed. And folks, here, we got to take a break. We're going to get Sigmund Bloom on the phone here, again, a Bleacher Report NFL draft lead writer and footballguys.com senior writer. Going to get him on the line, going to talk some NFL draft. He's been monitoring the pro day circuit here forever. We're going to talk about yesterday's Alabama pro day and Ryan Tannehill's workout with him. So, you know, we're going to talk NFL draft with him. So just hang on here and we'll be right back shortly on Railbird Central. Welcome back to Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com, and joining us right now on the program, we have Sigmund Bloom, NFL Draft lead writer at Bleacher Report and senior writer at DraftGuys.com. Sigmund, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, doing great. It's draft season. It's fun. It's always stimulating. Even if we're just trying to put together the clues, kind of like the Scooby-Doo Mystery Machine guys, only to find out that we were being tricked the whole time, it's okay because this news that comes out with team visits, with team interest, with the owners' meetings this week and owners and coaches dropping hints about things and trying to decipher it all. It's so much fun leading up to the draft. And really, I think you probably agree, this has been the best NFL offseason that I can remember as far as intriguing storylines. And I think the draft is just going to add to that.
I just love the Scooby-Doo Mystery Machine metaphor. That's pretty good and pretty accurate as well. When you never quite know what NFL executives are thinking or doing, and they try to lead you off the path sometimes, but that's funny. Let's get right to it here. Yesterday, Ryan Tannehill had his own private workout at Texas A&M. This is a guy who was a protege of Mike Sherman, the former Packers head coach, was the head coach at Texas A&M. You know, Sig, you had tweeted yesterday, you were saying, should we be considering if the Seattle Seahawks are really interested in Ryan Tannehill? And I had actually given you a little grief saying no, and I guess I do that from the perspective. I'm really followed the Seahawks a little bit now that Matt Flynn has signed with them, and thinking, wow, they've got to be committed to Matt Flynn with their quarterback position. I mean, what do you think there? Are the Seahawks really considering Ryan Tannehill, and where else might he go?
Well, let's take Seattle first. The commitment to Matt Flynn was $10 million guaranteed. He'll get a $2 million salary this year. So it's not a massive commitment. I think some of that reflects the new rookie salary scale under the CBA and how teams don't have to commit. What's Robert Griffin's contract going to be? 5 years, $22 million or something like that. So I think that the modest commitment is indicative of a modest commitment. And when the Seahawks say that Tavares Jackson and Matt Flynn will compete, I think it's a real competition. I think that Tavares Jackson's very underrated. I think a lot of very good things he did last year have been glossed over, but we don't have to drill down into that. The thing about Tannehill is you can look at him and you can put together a projection of a franchise quarterback. And I think that he's the last of the three potential franchise quarterbacks in this draft. You don't get that many shots to take a franchise quarterback, maybe once every 5 or 10 years or 0 years, really, unless you hit on a Tom Brady late in the draft if you're a good team. So the opportunity to take Tannehill at number 12, the Seahawks, while they do have some needs, I think they're a team that can compete with the 49ers with what they have on the roster right now. With only a 3-year commitment to Flynn, and really 2 years when you look at how they could get out of that contract and not be stung by it too much, you let Tannehill be in the incubator for 2 years. You take him as the best player available. The skills are there, the mindset's there, the commitment's there. And when you have Pete Carroll showing up and crashing a dinner with Jeff Ireland and Joe Philbin, and you have also Daryl Bevel in attendance, we can say that Seattle's just trying to create a market for the number 12 pick, trade up from another team if he falls. But that's a pretty elaborate ruse just to try to take a what-if scenario and maximize it.
Absolutely. Another mystery machine aspect to this whole thing. Another stop on the Pro Day Tour yesterday was in Alabama, where a lot of the guys nursing injuries worked out yesterday or had injuries in the past. Let's start with Courtney Upshaw. Do I sense he's slipping a little bit in mock drafts? I heard one of the talking heads on the NFL Network saying late first round. And, of course, the Packers need an outside linebacker, so this is kind of interest to Packer fans.
Yeah, and this is a topic that should definitely interest Packer fans. And we've got perceptions. I mean, we're in the funhouse. We're in the House of Mirrors at this time, not just with the NFL and subterfuge, which is not as big a part as we like to talk about as what's going on out there. A lot of it's just sincere information. But also our perceptions, we're sort of in an echo chamber with each other. And there was some hard information that teams were not happy with Courtney Upshaw not working out at the first pro day. They thought that it was a bit suspect. Scouts were unhappy to show up and not see him there. So there was a bit of pressure on him. And also, Courtney Upshaw's not out there doing anything. So other players like Melvin Ingram, like Nick Perry, like Whitney Mercilus, comparable players are doing things, are creating buzz. And meanwhile, we're just waiting and waiting on Upshaw. He didn't have an outstanding pro day. And the other thing about Upshaw is he doesn't necessarily move in space the way you would like a 3-4 outside linebacker to move. Some even project him as a 3-4 inside linebacker and think that he would be more ideal in that position. But the interesting thing to watch with him is he's a high floor player. So we also see philosophies exposed during the draft of, do teams prefer the high floor player, the high character player who they know what they're going to get, even though it might not be as high a ceiling as some of the comparable prospects? Or do they like the projectable player where you say, hey, we can do this and this with this guy. We could turn him into something that he hasn't figured out how to do himself. Either way, running mock draft after mock draft, I do about 2 or 3 a week now. The Packers are going to have someone slip through to them, whether it's Perry or Upshaw or Mercilus or even a guy like Andre Branch from Clemson. I think that what Ted Thompson's job right now is to decide their board, have clarity on their board on these outside linebacker prospects, and be ready. Now they have this extra comp pick, so they can trade their natural picks, give them away like candy. Be ready to move up if they see Upshaw. If they have Upshaw ranked second or Nick Perry ranked second on that board at outside linebacker, and they fall to 21, 22, 23, be ready to move up and snag their guy just like they did with Clay Matthews.
Could be interesting, could happen. Let's keep it with the Alabama Pro Day here. Another guy, Mark Barron, The safety from Alabama, he had hernia surgery that set him back, and he apparently wasn't even 100% yesterday when he worked out. Is this surgery going to cost him any, and is he still first-round material?
I think he's still first-round sorry. He's still first-round material. It may cost his draft stock a bit simply because teams haven't been able to work him out as thoroughly and get an idea, seeing him at the combine next to players that they can compare him to. But on the field, he's obviously the guy. He's not a free safety. He's not going to be a center fielder, but as an in-the-box safety, a guy that can blitz, a hard-nosed leader. And really, you look at all of these Alabama defensive players this year as profiting from what each other did. And we could easily see in a lot of the mock drafts I project, you'll see Dre Kirkpatrick, the cornerback, Mark Barron, the safety, and Courtney Upshaw, the linebacker, go off the board within five picks of each other. It just shows how dominant that defense was for them to have that many players highly placed. Mark Barron is a player that's going to be in play for a lot of teams in the second half of the first round. He could be a value like Heath Miller, who went in the end of the first round because of hernia surgery. I don't think it's something that threatens him long term. And I do think that any number of teams could be made better by Barron.
I know he didn't work out yesterday, but another Alabama player, Dante Hightower, their linebacker, he's a candidate to be selected by the Packers at number 28. What are your impressions on him?
Sure, and it's often Hightower's in that mix too, and I think if you're looking at it through the Packers lens, you probably want to watch the Steelers because the Steelers have been zeroed in on Hightower basically since January, and any Steelers beat writer that's covering the draft beat for them, the name Hightower comes up again and again and again. The Steelers had a large contingent at the first Alabama Pro Day. He fits what they do, and, you know, well, Dom Capers, and you know Dom Capers' lineage, so it makes sense that he would fit in the Packers' defense, too. He's just a hard-nosed player. He embodies a lot of the fire of that Alabama defense. Yet another player. They haven't talked about Josh Chapman yet, the nose tackle who suffered an ACL, or we might even be talking about him in the top 50 picks. Maybe he'll get there anyway. The point is, we can all remember Alabama-LSU championship game, and everyone was groaning about there's going to be no offense. Well, that's why. I mean, when you have a defense stacked like this, these guys are going to translate to the NFL. If the Steelers don't take Hightower, you put him next to Desmond Bishop, and that's just a very fearsome backbone of that defense.
Absolutely. One player I'm absolutely infatuated with is South Carolina's Stephon Gilmore. He seems to be a guy who's rising up mock drafts. I don't think he makes it to the Packers at number 28, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on him and his supposed rising stock.
Right, and we have basically at the cornerback position this year, the draft landscape is Morris Claiborne, who's going to go in the top six picks, even with this wrist surgery. And you just watch him and you see shutdown corner skills from him. And then Stephon Gilmore, and we talked about Dre Kirkpatrick. And I like Dre Kirkpatrick, although with his frame and his playing style, some are saying that he may be not the number two or three corner, but the number one free safety in this draft. And, you know, he's not quite as sudden, not quite as athletic as Gilmore, where you picture Gilmore. You watch Gilmore's tape and you see some things that bother you. You see some missed tackles. You see some over-aggressive play. But you also see a very aggressive mindset and the tools, the physical tools, to really maximize that whenever he makes a true read on a play. Kirkpatrick's similar, but Gilmore's even more athletically gifted than Kirkpatrick. So Gilmore is a player, I think, that you might have seen not in very many first rounds, say 2 months ago. You start to see him creep into the 20s. A lot of people projecting him to Cincinnati at 17 or 21. Now, it doesn't even seem like he's going to make it out of the top 15. He is a hot prospect right now, and he is somebody that, especially if you want to look smart at your draft party, a lot of people don't know about him. He's going to go in the first round and probably be the second cornerback off the board.
To wrap things up here, I know you kind of mentioned in passing Nick Perry and Whitney Mercilus earlier when we were talking about Upshaw and outside linebackers, but I'm kind of wondering about Perry and Mercilus a little bit. Yeah. They're both guys that played defensive end in college, you know, but if they were to be drafted by the Packers, you know, they would be stand-up outside linebackers. Can they make that transition, those two guys?
With Perry, I don't think it's a question at all, and you can look at Perry's combine numbers and you can watch the tape to see how those tools translate, and he fits as an outside linebacker. He can play in space. He looks much more natural than Courtney Upshaw, for instance, in that kind of role. He's a pretty gifted pass rusher. There's not one pass rusher that really stands out from the pack this year, but he works. He's not going to be a DeMarcus Ware, but he can definitely be a perfect complement to Clay Matthews. And he's a guy that could slip through the cracks. I mean, the teams you're looking at would be maybe San Diego. I think that Cincinnati might be in the market for a defensive end. Tennessee would be in the market for a defensive end. If you can get through that gauntlet, perhaps Cleveland, although they made some signings, then you may well see a guy like Perry fall through those next picks, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Denver. They're obviously set at pass rusher. Houston, and then New England would be the last obstacle there. Again, this is why I bring up that Ted Thompson should have that finger on the trigger, ready to draft that, to make that trade up in the draft. If they see that guy fall past that gauntlet of Chicago and Tennessee and Cincinnati, then they should be ready to pounce on their guy. It could be Perry, it could be Merciless. Merciless, the big question is, was he a one-year wonder? He came out of nowhere, really, to lead the Division I in sacks last year. A lot of people knock him because some of the sacks seem like coverage sacks or effort sacks. He didn't exhibit necessarily that full array of natural pass rush moves that a sack artist would carry over. However, in his drills and in the combine, he has surprised people by, because he's more of that classic long frame defensive end, he's surprised by moving very well in space, putting up great numbers in his tests at his pro day and at the combine to convince people that he can play both. He's one of the few guys out of this list that we keep talking about, Ingram, Upshaw, Perry. Merciless can legitimately play in a 4-3 as an end, and it looks like now as a 3-4 outside linebacker. That's only increasing his value. I think he's maybe the least likely. When I'm doing this, it seems like Perry or Upshaw squirts through to the Packers zone of the draft. Although Upshaw is also a guy that, Seattle may really like because he fits what they do there with that elephant position.
Mm-hmm. Sigmund, thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the good work at Bleacher Report. It's great to see your work there. And of course, you were named the NFL draft lead writer there, and our own Aaron Nagler of Cheesehead TV became the NFL draft lead writer. Really good to see what's happening there at Bleacher Report lately.
Yeah, it's a great thing to be part of this wave of great football writers at Bleacher Report, great football discussion, a great community. And I think that we can all agree that we're passionate about this game. We're passionate about processing everything we learn about it and getting in the conversation. It's a great time to be part of this community. And I know that, we can go back to one of the first time I was on here 3 years ago, which I'll own up to railing against the Clay Matthews pick. So maybe you shouldn't listen to a thing that I say. But it's fun to see how much our community has evolved. And most importantly, we are the football media, and it's fantastic. And I think that we've all made each other better. We continue to make each other better, and especially the audience. And we are nothing without the audience. And you all, like our accomplishments are your accomplishments. And I know that this is one of the best audiences anywhere on any podcast, any team fan site or team coverage site. So it's always a great pleasure to be here.
Thanks a lot. You're going to fish at SPAC this summer?
I'll be at SPAC the 6th, 7th, and 8th of July, including a birthday show. This only happens once every 5 years now that I have a son, so I'm very pleased that my wife, as a birthday present, is letting me get out there. So, yeah, any other fish heads, I won't be at Alpine Valley, but I will be at SPAC.
Sounds good. Sigmund, thanks for joining us on the show.
Yeah, I can't wait to come back. Thanks.
Thank you. Take care. Sigmund Bloom, NFL draft lead writer on Bleacher Report and senior writer at footballguys.com, talking some NFL draft. Glad to be having him on there. I know Sig a little bit personally. He's a fish fan, as am I, in the music world. So we talk about that a little bit personally. So don't mean the rest of the people out there don't mean to be getting away from the NFL draft talk. But that concludes our show for today here on Railbird Central. Anyway, thank you to Sigmund Bloom for joining us. Thank you to John Rahor and Jamie Jors, our live blog directors this morning. And thank you, everybody, for joining us to talk some Packers football today, our audience joining us. So I leave you today. Have a good weekend. We'll see you back on Monday. We'll be having South Carolina State safety Christian Thompson on the show on Monday morning, hopefully for sure this time. So make sure to tune in then. Stay tuned for your coverage all weekend long at Cheesehead TV. I leave you today with a song called Words by Umphrey's McGee on Psy Fidelity Records. And go Pack, go.